Do roll call first.
Chair Collins.
Here.
Deputy Chair Corcoran.
Here.
Legislator Clinton.
Here.
Legislator Harmon.
Here.
Legislator Kitchen is not here. Legislator McCullough.
Here.
Legislator Stewart.
Here.
You have quorum.
Okay, call the meeting to order. Do I have a motion to approve the March 6, 2025 meeting minutes?
Motion. Second.
Second. You got that? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, we'll start with resolutions. Resolution 136. Setting public hearing on the sale and or transfer of lands owned by Ulta County, located at 21 Elizabeth Street, City of Kingston, to the Ulster County Housing Development Corporation, a local development corporation. I'm going to ask the planning director or...
So, thank you, Chair. Yeah. Why don't I do this? I'm going to turn it over to Joanna because there's a long history.
Sure.
So I'll turn it over to the deputy county executive to explain the history. We can get into details of where we are now in terms of the transfer.
Okay. Yeah, I can start. So... as you all know, we bought the former boarding house, Elizabeth Manor. The original plan was to turn it into affordable housing, but specifically emergency shelter for families. We're still moving forward with turning the property into affordable housing. So most recently, we issued an RFP to seek proposals. We got two applicants. Very exciting, and we issued an intent to award earlier in March. There was representatives from both the departments and the executive branch and the legislative branch on the selection committee. We are requesting to move forward with a transfer of the property to the Housing Development Corporation, with a public hearing to do that transfer in order to move the project forward, because the Housing Development Corporation would be the entity responsible for developing the property in partnership with a selected developer, like we're doing now with the Golden Hill Housing Development. We have a conceptual plan right now. There's a lot of refinement that we would need to do as we negotiate the purchase and sale agreement, and we also have to work with the city to make sure that all the zoning codes are met and everything. But at a high level, we're looking at creating affordable home ownership opportunities to families making at or below 80% of AMI. And we are, conceptually looking at three 12-unit buildings. That's what our goal is. So,
Chair, thank you. A couple of things to add to that. One is that you should know that the county has purchased this property using ARPA funds. We do own the property in fee right now. One of the reasons we're here today is that when we looked at the rehabilitation costs for that building compared to what we were originally proposing it for with emergency housing, the legislature balked at that cost and basically charged the executive team to essentially find an alternate solution. So we've been working on that alternate solution, and it resulted in that RFP process to move this forward. I would also say that this is a very familiar process for those of us that have been around when we did the Golden Hill project. This is exactly what we did for Golden Hill. The county surplused a portion of its Golden Hill property to the development corporation. The RFP was out. There were five proposals at that point in time, and the development corporation then made the choice of the developer and moved the project forward to a point where now we're anticipating that some of these units could be completed by as early as fall this year.
Wow.
I have a question. You said affordable home ownership, not rental. Can you clarify what that means and explain it?
Sure. So the application we have is from a very interesting collaboration of a local Hudson Valley-based construction architecture company, as well as two nonprofits. One of them has expertise in developing limited equity cooperatives, so that they have the legal and the financing expertise to do that. So that would be the model that we are working towards. And then another one of the nonprofits in the partnership has expertise in in targeting, recruiting, vetting, and supporting homeowners who are on the lower income end of the spectrum to make sure that they're able to succeed and sustain the payments moving forward.
Okay. So the existing building is to be demolished, correct?
Right.
So I'm working on a resolution in another committee, trying to get projects, county projects, where they're demolishing a building to deconstruct it rather than demolish it and use, you know, the materials again. And I was wondering if any discussion along those lines have taken place with these companies.
I can take this. The companies involved have expertise with respect to demolition. I would tell you that there's a similar resolution out there from the legislature from several years ago that talks about the idea of how much demolition debris has to be recycled. We incorporated that when we did the Golden Hill project. I believe we achieved a recycling rate for that project of about 85% of the total. We didn't set it that high, but that's what they achieved. This building may be somewhat challenged because of there is hazardous materials within the building that we have to be concerned about, but the concrete blocks and other types of things, asphalt, are easily recyclable.
That's great to hear.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that that's already been on your radar. So, okay, thank you.
Questions or discussion?
If I could just add one last thing, one of the reasons that we're excited about the home ownership option is, as you all know, we've been doing many different initiatives in the spectrum of housing, ranging from eviction prevention to subsidizing the creation of affordable rental housing and many things in between. But one thing that we haven't made foray yet into is affordable home ownership. And that's a very important part of the whole ladder of how we are able to build equity and wealth in this country. So that's
about
that piece too.
I'm really happy with that because that was a point that I've been looking at too, is we don't have a whole lot of home ownership programs together. And as you say, that's how you build equity in this country and how you build wealth is home ownership. So I appreciate that this project is focused on that.
Two questions. Thank you, Chair. The first is 3 to 12 buildings, how many units? And the second is, in terms of thinking about Mitchell, about home ownership, are there ways in which we could be tapping into Mitchell Llama programming?
We're in a zoning district. Kingston has a form-based code. We're in a zoning district that will allow up to 12 units in a single building.
Okay.
So then what you end up doing in these conversations is bedrooms. Units are one calculation, bedrooms are the other. I want to go back and indicate to you that there's two discussions. One is the ability to get a waiver from that provision so you can get more units. As unit count goes up, bedroom count goes down per unit. So thinking of this, what you're looking at is, remember, the original purpose here was family housing for emergency families. We took that in mind when we took a look at the RFP process. The RFP process basically said that our focus was on 2 and 3 bedroom units. The proposals that we have in front of us would be a majority of 2 and 3 bedroom units. And depending upon our discussions with the city of Kingston in terms of any changes we need to make to the unit count relative to the zoning statute, we would then adjust accordingly.
And just on the Mitchell Llama question, from my understanding, Mitchell Llama is specific to New York City in the metro area, but there is guidance and regulations for limited equity cooperatives outside of that region, and there are a couple others in Poughkeepsie and Beacon, and I'm not sure if there are Mitchell Llama projects, but that Mitchell Llama is like kind of a subset of the limited equity co-op.
Can we confirm that? Because I have a couple of people who've indicated to me that perhaps that's just something that we've all been wandering around assuming that it's a New York City-based thing, because there are some outside of the city, and I looked pretty hard and couldn't find anything that
So precluded use.
What we can say is that the project team has identified a funding source through HCR.
Not Mitchell-Ama, but
yeah,
it's not that's a good, yeah, I'll make a note of
that. You can always look for more money.
So since the focus on here is for families, which I think is awesome, so we're looking at like 2-bedroom units and 3-bedroom units, or as opposed to studios or 1-bedrooms?
I would say to you that where we are now is that if we move into the 12-unit configuration, they're predominantly 3 bedrooms, if not all 3 bedrooms. We can actually get a 1 4-bedroom unit in there if we have to. As we move into additional units, then what would end up happening is you would get a mix of 3 and 4 bedrooms, 2 bedrooms, and 1 bedroom. But there, to the best of my knowledge, there are no studios that were proposed.
Great. And will this proposed facility also have like social service, like support services available as well, I assume? Or am I assuming wrong?
This is home ownership. So the short answer is that we're not seeing support services in the typical way that they're mentioned, and usually in this committee, as we're talking about affordable home rentals with what we call permanent housing with support services. What we're seeing here is effectively we want to make sure that a co-op at a lower income level can be successful. So the conversations we've had so far are literally, have you done this before? Has it been done at this income level before? And can the co-op be successful? And we're getting those answers.
Perfect. So these will be co-ops.
As is proposed right now, the answer is yes.
Great. Thank you.
We're really early on here. So having been tied to some things that we've said before relative to the Golden Development Corporation, we're very early on here. This is discussions that are ongoing. So just be aware of that.
Any other questions?
I think it sounds very exciting, so yay.
Can I hear a motion?
And I'll second that.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, resolution 137, authorizing the use of funds from the Housing Action Fund for the establishment of the Ulster County Accessory Dwelling Unit Revolving Loan Fund, Department of Planning. I'm guessing this is probably Senior Planner Kai, Tyler Fung?
Sure. Yes, I think we were here last month just talking about the idea and getting some feedback. So I won't give a full recap of where we're at. We have the plus one ADU program that we're administering with LEPCO around 3 coming this summer. That is going well, but the cap on the grants for units is $112,000. There's a gap. Especially for lower income folks of what the cost is for units. And so we're proposing this program to support the ADU program, but also generally anyone who's interested in building an ADU on the property to provide a attractive loan product, looking at somewhere between 1% and 3% interest rate. We're asking this program to focus on administration from a housing organization as well as a financial institution to partner together to administer the program for us, so we wouldn't be doing it in-house. But this is open to anyone, any AMI level, but in exchange for keeping rents affordable for that loan with a very good interest rate, affordable for taxpayers. It's very similar to the program.
So one of the things that we wanted to do with this resolution is, in full transparency to the legislature, the original Housing Action Fund was conceived as grants, and there was not a loan program conceived in that original resolution and description of what the Housing Action Fund would do. We wanted to make sure that the legislature was aware that we were taking a look at this Housing Action Fund, looking at monies from that fund to be used as a revolving loan program, and have that approval in front of us before we went forward.
I think I mentioned this last month too, but this is a model that's been used in other locations. Vermont has a program, many communities in California who also have programs, so we're not the first out of the gate here, maybe first in the Hudson Valley region, but the state is also looking at something like this because they have also identified that there's this gap between what the grant amount is for that ADU grant program and then the actual cost of the grant.
And you'll be working with a local lender or?
The plan is to go out to RFP to get proposals on administration, but the idea is a local housing organization to work on the affordability side and then a local financial institution to work on the loan product side. I'll also mention that this is a but-for loan program. So part of that loan would be coming from the financial institution itself, and anything that they can't provide in terms of the risk or the amount of money they'll provide to that homeowner, that's where we step in and make up the gap with our program.
So for the ADU, is it the loan for the person in the ADU or the loan for the person who owns a property that has the
homeowner, property owner who's interested? You know, the ADU program with RUFCO is capped at 100% of AMI, and there are folks above 100% AMI who still want to build a house, you know, build an ADU for their parent or for a child or to rent. Well, in this case, it would be a rental. But they don't qualify for that program. So this is open to anyone, but it's for property owned.
Okay.
It's a better financial product for property owners. Okay. Building.
Any other questions? Great.
You just said that person getting the loan will get some from the financial and will make up the difference.
Yeah.
So when the person pays his money back, are they making one payment or two separate payments?
It would be one payment to that financial institution, but the sources of the funds, the loan, would be split up so that we're not necessarily replacing money that a local bank would provide to a homeowner before adding.
But for monies in terms of either home ownership or housing rehabilitation work through federal programs and other programs, they are consistent with what we're proposing here. And essentially what it is you borrow as much as you can. When you can't borrow, we step into the gap. We've done this with homeownerships using community development block grant funds for years. This is just our money versus federal money. But the idea of having an underwriting institution using their expertise and extending their ability to loan, it makes a lot of sense. And you're seeing some of this from economic development as well.
So the financial institution would qualify the loan, not you guys, and you just have money in excess of what they can loan based on what their qualifications are. Okay.
And we want the expertise of a financial institution to ensure they're good.
And I think it's really important that we get affordability out of this. It's the public money is going in for affordability purpose. So you get an additional unit and plus affordability.
Okay. Questions, anyone? Is there a motion? Let's go to Clinton.
Second.
I'm going to give it to Harmon.
Oh.
All in favor?
Aye.
I almost forgot to say that. Okay, resolution 138, approving the execution of a contract for $116,464 entered into by the county with Catholic Charities of Orange and Sullivan County, Department of Social Services. And that would be Director Posey.
Thank you. And this is an allocation from the OGDA program, which is called the SAFE program, which is Shelter Arrears Eviction Forestallment Program. And we identify families that are basically at risk of losing their housing. And we arrive at being able to determine their eligibility to pay their shelter arrears, so that if they're vulnerable to eviction or they are the subject of an eviction proceeding, that can be resolved and they can retain their housing.
Questions? Do we know how many families this program could assist, or is it?
The last time around, we were able to assist, I believe it was 10 families.
Okay.
It's not an enormous allocation, but we've had kind of similar kinds of programs that OTBA sponsors and funds. And you know, each of those recipients that are able to retain their housing benefit. So
yeah, it's seems like,
you know, rents are anywhere between $1,500 to $2,000 a month, and we can pay up to 6 months of arrears. So it goes pretty quickly.
As I remember this, you also work with them to make sure that they don't get in arrears in the future, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Is there a motion? President Clinton?
And I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, resolution 139, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $175,000 entered into by the county and the family of Woodstock. I'll take a break as well. We're on resolution 139. Let's put it.
Thank you.
Commissioner Iposi.
Thank you. So in this resolution, we're seeking to amend the not to exceed in the contract that we have with family of Woodstock, which provides for emergency shelter after hours. Based on the amount of the invoices that we received during calendar year 2024, in order to be able to reimburse them for the expenditures they incurred in connection with making emergency after hours placements, we need to increase the not to exceed. And so that's basically what this resolution is asking for.
Questions, anyone? Sorry,
so this is, we're reimbursing family of Woodstock for those services.
Yeah, they incur expenditure placing individuals and families after hours, and then they invoice us for those expenditures.
You put me down for attendance, I just got out of work.
I have some questions. So one is, this is more than twice the initial contracts. Mm-hmm. And the other question I have is, according to their standard contracts, they need to get the okay before they go beyond the initial contract.
Right.
And I don't know if that means that we have to okay it because we're the legislature, or to get the okay through your work, but this is a contract for 2024. It's now April 2025, and we're going back and paying them more than twice what the initial contract was. How come we didn't get this in 2024 when they exceeded the initial contract?
Because we didn't have the invoices in 2024. The way that the billing essentially works under the contract is that we normally will not receive invoices for them anywhere from 60 to 90 days after some of the expenses are incurred. So the other thing that happened in 2024 was we continued to experience upticks in the emergency homeless population. And based on the inventory that was available, family of Woodstock ended up utilizing its inventory for longer periods of time. So they were faced with having to place people multiple times over lengths of stay. So basically what ended up happening is during the term of the contract, there was recognition around the fact that we were going to be exceeding the contract amount. And I think we had the discussion the February meeting about a similar in the contract. So subsequent to that discussion, I did make an inquiry that's in the process of being reviewed about putting language in the contracts to address the issue that you raised.
Okay. It's just the concern that I have is not so much that the I'm 100% certain I deserve to be reimbursed for this. The question is timing of that and authorization of that, and being, you know, 6 months after the money was spent, or reimbursing them without knowing that we have to do that. So it's real about financial responsibility of like understanding what's happening when it's happening, as opposed to after the fact.
Yeah. Well, that's also part of it is the hotel prices that we paid this year were almost double of what we paid in 2023 because we've emergency housing, they pay whatever that cost is for the hotel that night. So we're paying real expenses for it. So that's also the other thing we can't judge when we do the contract what the cost is going to be this year. We can kind of give an estimate, but we don't want to do too much of an estimate overboard because then we have a contract for a higher amount that we may not use. And then we get questions on that too.
And that was one of the dynamics we talked about. And just for purposes of, you know, genuine transparency, I do have the contract and I have my notes from our February 6th meeting where I highlighted the specific language, and it is currently under review to either modify that language in our current contracts or arrive at amending those contracts so that the issue that you raised does get addressed.
And again, it's not that I doubt the fact that we should reimburse it. It's more I just want to make sure that we're following the contract and we're getting notification from the vendor in a timely manner that we can react to it in a timely manner.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if it's an issue there or an issue in the finance department or an issue where the issue is that's taking so long for it to get to us. So I would just want to understand where that is and where that's going.
To be able to get an accurate amount of expenditures for calendar year 2024, we needed to really work with Family of Woodstock to ensure that they were forwarding us all of their invoices so we could arrive at the accurate amendment amount.
Mm-hmm.
And again, going through December 31st to be able to get that by the end of February, and then it puts us on the March cycle to do this amendment. So we are definitely aware of the issues that you've brought up, and we are currently working on trying to address those.
The uptick in, we were told that the prices doubled from 2023 to 2024. And does that uptick reflect an increase that we're being charged by these owners? Or is that because we are dealing with more people in need of these services? Or like, how does that break down?
We had a couple of different dynamics at play. The prices across the board did not mathematically double. The prices went up.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the inflation that's been experienced over the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a variable. There was also the variable of more emergency homeless clients. So it was really those two factors together. And again, you know, we're budgeting for calendar year 2024. We're working on our budget in April, May, and June of 2023. And, you know, none of us have a crystal ball in terms of how much prices will go up or how much the emergency homeless population will go up. Now, we do track the data as closely as we can. And there are a lot of reports that are arrived at, you know, but obviously we have seen significant increases in the expenditures.
Thank you.
Sure.
Next question. What's the 2025 contract look like? Has that been?
I think we put the 2025 contract in for two.
It was two something.
Yeah. I'd have to check. I'd have to go into New Orleans and check.
Okay. So that sounds like that's probably going to have to be amended at some point too, given.
Yeah. But it wasn't as significant because, again, we came up with that in
the summer
of 2024, so we didn't have the benefit of this information, but you're absolutely correct that we may be able to get out in front of it based on what we are seeing in terms of the invoices that are coming in so far this year.
Let's go to kitchen.
I'm all for this program. Actually, I have properties that I managed that have Family Woodstock clients in them. My question is there ever a time where they have they always used up the amount allotted or more, or has there ever been a time where if they don't use up all that money, what do they do with that money? If they don't use it up, does it ever come back?
It's not an amount that they bill to. it's an amount that is invoiced based on what they arrive at expending.
Okay.
So
gotcha. I understand. Ever,
yeah, and it's strictly for reimbursement.
Understand.
Of the expense savings.
It's not a budget exempt, yeah. Correct. Gotcha.
Okay.
Yep.
Gotcha. Any questions? Is there a motion?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Preference, second. Yeah, first. Let's let it work in a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution 140, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $30,000, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000, entered into by the County and Family of Woodstock towards Social Services. Commissioner Raposo.
So this is similar but different to the last resolution. The driving factor was that OCFF ended up increasing the per diem rate for Lockdown House, which is our domestic violence shelter. So while this contract was implemented and in place for calendar year 2024, with an original not to exceed of 333,448, the per diem was increased from 119.59 to 129.31. So there was an increase of 972 per occupied bed per day. So when that increase is implemented, and as a result of OCFS's decision to do that, you know, we have to then retroactively factor it in to the contract. So based on the expenditures that were incurred, we're requesting, you know, the increase from the 333,448 to 363,448. And that's something that is outside our scope of ability to have exerted influence on or have declined to accept. It's a rate that, you know, we have to adhere to.
Okay. Any questions?
Questions too? Mine's not so much a question. I mean, I'm totally in favor of, you know, a resolution. I was just wondering if we could set up a tour of the Washburn House for members of this committee.
I'll look into it.
Yeah, we'll look into it.
I don't want to.
You don't want to be doing that. Residents are there, though.
Yeah, you know, something that could be right that. They're particularly.
Very confidential.
About you know, protecting confidentiality around the location
and
the safety of the staff and the residents there. And I'm not suggesting that legislators wouldn't be able to be accommodated, but let me contact, you know, the provider and see how we might be able to arrive at that.
Okay, great.
I'm wondering if, I'm not sure why you want to tour it, but that we have eyes on feels like not a terrible idea, if that's what you're after.
It was simply out of curiosity on my part to see what the facility.
Let's have a discussion at the end of this about that kind of a thing, because I would like to have some tours of places we put.
Just going to suggest that in this particular case, perhaps it would be okay for one or possibly two members of the committee, especially women, since I'm presuming that's mostly who's there to go.
I'd be in favor of what Legislator Harmon's saying. I think it'd be.
I'll discuss that later. This is not for a particular resolution, but I do think it's a great idea. Let's discuss it after on the new business.
Perfect.
Okay. Any further discussion on Resolution 140? Is there a motion?
No, I'll make a motion to approve.
We'll call it for a second. All in favor? Okay. Resolution 141, authorizing the filing of applications and related documentation for the Federal Transit Administration and Operating Administration of the U.S. Department of Transportation assistance authorized by 49 U.S.C. Chapter 53, Title 23, United States Code, Ulster County Area Transits. You want to go, Keith?
Basically, what this resolution is stating is that we received federal funding from FTA, and in order to submit our grants, they would like us to produce a resolution for opinion of counsel stating that the county follows all procedures for certain assurances when applying for grants, and also we have the capacity legally to apply for assistance, and we also have the ability to come up with our local shares. That's basically what this is stating. It's a new requirement this year that we haven't had to do. So we're basically stating, or you are, that you allow us to apply for grant funding.
Thank you, Director Rosa. Any questions of the director? Any questions at all? Is there a motion?
There's a comment over here.
I'm sorry.
And then we just add to that any specific applications, grant applications that require a match from the county would still proceed, would have a separate resolution that comes in front of the legislature. So this is just kind of a general resolution, and then pursuant to the established policy and procedure, we would still come in front of you for approval for certain grant issues.
Okay.
And how much money are we currently getting from the Federal Transit Administration?
Every year it's different. So 5307 gives us formula funds. Last year for 2024, we received a little over $2 million through the formula funds. This year, they haven't come out with the full amount. Sometimes they do it quarterly. Sometimes they do it, you know, annually. So right now they haven't come out with the full apportionment for 2025. And those are just our formula funds. We also get funds from the TMA. We get funds transferred from the state. So there's a difference in the thing that comes through.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
Any further questions? Is there a motion?
Almost.
Second by Pleasure Clinton. All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution 142, establishing a policy requiring naloxone be available on county transit vehicles for emergency use. This is introduced by Legislator McCullough.
Well, thank you, Mr.
Would you like to explain and discuss it?
Yeah. This one's pretty easy. I work together with a constituent, and it's already on the buses. It was implemented. This resolution is only to protect it, because if they get new management can say, hey, this was implemented, we don't want it. So I want this in place to protect what's been done.
Great.
Is it currently just available?
It's on the bus already.
It is. Okay.
The training and the drivers have been trained.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'd like to see
it. So every year we have Todd Carroll from the Sheriff's Office come over, and he gives training on administering this on the buses. We do it once a year, and it's also provided in our training to any new drivers that are hired during the year that haven't been subjected to the yearly training that we do have. And right now, we are starting to incorporate videos in our training, so now they'll be able to see a video on how to administer.
Is it ever
administered?
It's confidential.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So it's saving lives already.
It has.
Okay, wonderful.
Great. We do call 911 first.
Yeah.
And if the driver feels uncomfortable administrating it before 911 is called, 911 will walk them through it. And also, if it's administrated and they don't need it, it won't harm them.
Any further discussion?
Of course not. The bus driver is not comfortable. Is there an option for someone else on the bus that's able to do it?
Yes.
Okay, good.
I believe it's legal for anyone to do it.
Yeah, I just want to make sure.
Yeah.
And just real quickly, I know that we've talked about having a ombudsman. I'm not sure what the proper term is. The people to assist the bus drivers, the bus stewards. Thank you.
Yes.
So those people also receive this training.
We don't have any of those yet, but they will.
They will. Yeah.
Any further questions? Is there a motion?
Almost.
Is there a second? Ms. Clinton for second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Okay, resolution 143, a setting of public hearing on proposed local law number 3 of 2025, a local law to ensure the safety of vulnerable road users in Ulster County, to be held on Tuesday, May 20th, 2025 at 7:05 p.m. This proposed local law would require the vehicles pass at a minimum 3 feet from vulnerable road users, you know, bicyclists, people on wheelchairs, et cetera. Sponsored by legislators Levine, Sperry, and Luchetel, none of whom happen to be here, correct? Yes.
Sorry, could you read that again?
Sure.
Sorry.
The resolution or the what it does?
What it does, yeah.
I'll summarize what it does. Basically, it passes a law that says you must be 3 feet from a vulnerable road user, which is defined as someone in a wheelchair, someone on a bicycle, someone walking, stroller, basically any person not in a car. I think that's basically the proposal, right? And evidently, this is a law in certain other counties locally and certain states. Go ahead.
Statewide, here at state does lag behind several states in having a safe pass law. However, I do have some questions to Legislator Levine regarding the types of roads that this local law would apply to. Does it specify it? Is this local, county, and state? Also, although there's a section on penalties, there's not any discussion of enforcement. So also curious about exactly what the mechanism is or the authority for enforcement, especially on state, county, and local roads.
I have the same concern about enforcement. I don't know how you enforce this in a...
Is it currently a DMV law?
No. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you enforce it in a way that doesn't become very subjective. Right. I mean, 3 feet is like, how big is it? That is that, or is it that? I mean, you know, that's my question and my concern. And I also expressed a concern to Legislator Levine about the ability to use this as a way to target certain drivers. You know, we already know that there's prejudice in targeting drivers in enforcement. We know that already. So this could be another reason to be able to stop someone for whatever reason they feel like doing it. So I have concerns about enforcement. I have concerns about how to make this work. I believe we could not legally apply this to state roads or enforce on state roads.
Yeah.
So I think there's some questions here. But again, this is only for public hearing. So things can be resolved between now and the public hearing. So that's my take on it, speaking with one of the sponsors. Any other questions? Do we hear any motions on this? Motion passed. Is there a second? Is there a second?
I was actually going to make a motion to postpone.
Okay. We already made the motion and seconded it.
The sponsor can withdraw their motion if they wanted to.
Would you want to withdraw the motion and second withdrawal also?
That's fine. I was just thinking, though, again, because it's a public hearing, it really
just gives us an opportunity to hear more voices and if there's other questions that need to be addressed. So that's why I was comfortable with seconding the motion, because, again, it's a public hearing. It's not an actual, you know, adopting the resolution for.
We do have some significant questions here, though, so I would feel better about getting it a little tighter before we go to public hearing so that we're presenting the public with something that's closer to our intent.
I agree with Legislator Harmon on that.
Okay, so there is, I believe, a motion to postpone. It's not been seconded yet. Is there a second? Any discussion on the motion to postpone? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, resolution 144, approving the execution of a contract amendment for for $80,007, implemented by the county and the Resource Center of
yes.
for Accessible Living, Inc. for the aging.
Right.
Okay.
Last one, make sure this is worth it.
Great organization, that's all I can say. It really helped people out.
Do we have someone to speak to this?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, didn't see you, Val. Sorry.
We've had a contract with ARCHEL for years to make people's homes more accessible, and we had quite a list of people waiting for ramps to get into their homes, and we were able to tap into our unmet needs grant funding, which doesn't affect any kind of burden on the county at all from NYSOPA, and we're asking for this money to be able to finish those projects.
Yeah, I think ARCHEL, I just want to speak on ARCHEL for a second. It's a great organization. If anybody in this room has ever known, if you break a hip or you need surgery or you need a wheelchair, you need a walker, you need a cane, you can go to ARCHEL and make a donation and get those items that you might need temporarily. And it was a very pleasant experience for me last year, and it helped me out a lot, quite a bit, even with the toilet chair and everything. Everything's right there. It's a great resource on Ulster Avenue. And I didn't know they existed until last year.
Mr. McCullough.
If someone needed with services, what is the process? And how do they find the joy?
Directly from ARCHEL or through us?
Whoever does the accessibility.
So it's usually for clients that we do this for the ramps and the wheels and any kind of accessibility modifications that happens to people's homes. They become our client, and then we contact ARCHEL. They have a guy who's not an architect but very good at assessing what people need, and they go out and they make an assessment, and they give us a quote, and it's within the confines of the contract.
Thank you.
Should I just add to that?
Sure.
So that's for this contract and for the Office of Aging, but individuals can go to ARCHEL separately and just request whatever they need.
Yep.
Any further discussion? Is there a motion? Clinton? Grace Harmon? All in favor?
Aye.
Wow, we're at new business. So let's talk about what we were discussing earlier, which is visiting centers, visiting shelters, visiting locations. I would like to do the same thing. I'd like to see some of the hotels that we use. Obviously, we have to work with them to make sure it's a good time to do it and make sure that we coordinate with DSS. I'd like to also think with whatever services we want to see and get informed on. So open the discussion.
Sure. I think it's a great idea. I would like to participate in any opportunities. Also, I think it'll make us
more informed mm-hmm. as we have to make decisions if we see things firsthand.
So. Within reason, of course, recognizing I'm well
aware of the situation with the Washburn House. So, Legislator Harmon and I.
The Washburn House is accessible. I agree, women should be going, not males. Whatever works. And again, if it doesn't work for them, it doesn't work for them. We don't want to intrude on their services. We just want to be able to be informed. So if we can do it in a way that that works, basically, that would be great.
Can I ask
you? Let's look at it.
Yeah, I had the privilege of visiting the warming center on Elmendorf Street this past winter. It was a great experience. I met Jeannie Edwards there who took me around. I spoke about this in a meeting, but it was really a good experience for me to see where, our county money is going. There are residents in there that were getting great care. They're getting food. They were getting a place to shower and bathe. And it was just the way that she was running the shelter was the way, I guess I should say, things should be done. You know, if you're there for so many days, you know, you have to take a shower and you have to get your clothes washed. And she had a whole structured program there. And I just drove her up and I said, you know, could I stop by and see the program? And it was very informal. I didn't stay long. I stayed maybe 20 minutes, half hour. But I think, too, is we don't necessarily have to go as a group. We could always maybe call one of the directors of these places and kind of be informal. Through my job, I've had the opportunity in the last 2 months to go to the homeless shelters on Thomas Street. And also there's two homeless shelters there. That was really a nice experience to go in there and see how clean these places are and how well taken care of the people are. And I was in there to conduct fire inspections, and everything was up to code, and their paperwork was by the book. All their sprinkler inspections and everything were up to date, and the staff was very responsive. There were people that were staying there that were interacting and helping out with the daily meals and cooking and different things. And it was a great experience for me to go into these places in the last couple of months and see what the county money is going towards. And there's people in there that really need help, and they're getting it. It's a good feeling.
That's great. So I think that would be great to do that. I also like to – we did do a visit to the RUPCO facility last year. If anyone's not done that, I'd like to maybe do that again. And also maybe take a look at Golden Hill and see the progress there.
Yes, I've been up there every week too. Yeah. It's coming nice.
Much better.
I'd just like to add on to the Woman Center. I like the idea that they utilize the kitchen, so they were able to purchase groceries, make the food themselves, mm-hmm. which kept costs down, which allowed them to use money in other areas. And I'm all for maximizing the dollars. And I also took a trip to Golden Hill facilities this week.
So I guess I'll work with DSS and set that up. Yeah. Anything else? Is there much to talk?
My apologies. I've started something with my planning board, and I just want to put that through. We're starting looking at strategic things that we can do from a planning board perspective. One of the things we're talking about has to do with a Greenway Compact, which is a pretty heavy lift. We're also talking about some other strategic issues with respect to the board in terms of how they can play a more important role in terms of overview of decisions rather than looking at individual project reviews. But one of the other things I've started is talking to the board about what I call every month fun facts that you should be aware of and that influence your decision making. So today's fun facts for this committee would be that HUD just released the area median income for Ulster County for 2025. The area median income in Ulster County for 2020 is now $119,000, which is a significant change in terms of where we were in 2019 versus where we are now.
So needs affordability is 80% of that, which is a lot. Yep, 84.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if I could just add one quick thing to that. I just found out today from my former employer that in the town of Marbletown, the average sale price for a house was over $900,000. Okay. And Marbletown has now become the highest property values in county.
You've made Ulster County too attractive. They all want to come here. This is what happens. Supply and demand.
It's such a great place.
Yep. Anything else?
You would see all through. I mean, you know.
Anything else? Do I have a motion to adjourn? All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, everyone, for coming.